You're listening to the Mets Blog Q&A Cast, presented by Citi, your podcast for one-on-one Mets conversations.
What's going on, Mets fans? I'm Matt Cerrone, and this is the Mets Blog Q&A Cast, presented by Citi. Keep an eye out this 2016 Mets season for Citi perks at Citi Field, which you can learn more about at Mets.com/Citi. Today, I'm talking to Rich Catino, who does an outstanding job for ESPN Radio, a couple other outlets. He's been writing post-game reaction for Mets Blog every now and then, and I love having him back in the mix. Does a great job out at the field doing interviews with players. He knows a lot of people. He really puts in the time to get to know these guys, and I think through him, we can learn a lot about the clubhouse and the interaction between the players and stuff. So, you know, I thought a couple weeks into the season, 3 weeks into the season, everybody's playing pretty good. Things are looking like we're going to have a fun year like we expected. And I thought, let's bring Rich in. Let's have a little conversation with him about sort of what he's seeing when he's out at the ballpark every day this year. So with that, let me bring in my interview with Rich Catino from ESPN Radio. So I want to hear from you because you've been out, you know, you've been following the team. I think you're out in Philly and you've been out at Citi Field with them. Compared to last year's team, which obviously had a great camaraderie and a great story behind them. But this season, this group of guys, is it the same feel, the same sort of relaxed, having fun kind of thing? Or is there a little bit of a noticeable pressure because of the expectations this time around?
I think there's a little pressure, but Matt, for the most part, I think it's very similar to last year. In fact, Neil Walker's persona may be fitting inside this locker room like he's been in there for 20 years, as Drubal Cabrera as well. So if possible, there are even better attitudes in terms of interaction than there was even last year. But I think that's shown on the field in the first 20-some-odd games of the season.
Yeah, how about him? I mean, how incredible. Now, I mean, obviously he's not going to hit 60 home runs this year, although that would be awesome if he did. But I mean, I watch him in these post-game things. He looks as in disbelief of all of this as anybody. I mean, what do you see from him, that he's doing and just sort of how is he being treated by his teammates? Because it's pretty wild. It's pretty impressive.
It really is. And, I watched a little bit of him over the years, and I always was amazed on how many big hits he got in a Pirate uniform. But I think what scouts told me when the Mets acquired him is that I would be very impressed with his on-the-field IQ as well, which is really there. Like, he doesn't let things get him down. I mean, there have been games where he's made errors and then made a great defensive play and then had a game-winning hit all on the same night. From the right-handed side of the plate, he definitely has made some adjustments. I don't think his swing is as loopy from that side as it used to be. But not even the home runs, but even the singles he's getting are just line shots. They're not bloops. They're not, bleeders to the infield. They're line shots to the outfield. And I think just his, he's seeing the ball well and his pitch selection's pretty good. You know, one of the things that's real interesting, Matt, and I'm not a huge numbers guy, but there's a number that is incredible with this Met team. On 0-2 pitches, they're hitting about 250. The average in baseball is well under 150 for that. That means one out of every four times the Mets see an 0-2 pitch as a team, they're getting a hit, which is amazing on an 0-2 count. And I think Neil Walker is the poster child for that. If you watch him on 0-2 pitches, he'll hit mistakes for base hits. He'll also hit tough pitches for base hits or foul a pitch off and then get a better 0-2 pitch the following pitch. And I think that's something he's brought to this team, and it's kind of spread like wildfire in this lineup.
You know, the poster child for that used to be David Wright. You know, he was unbelievable with two strikes. He'd, shorten his swing, go the other way. I mean, now he's striking out so much, and I'm having a real hard time as a fan, also somebody who knows him. I knows what he's going through and how difficult this back situation had been for him through the last year and all the prep work he does just to get ready for stretching is quite remarkable, and he's doing an amazing job. But at the same time, clearly not the same player, which is understandable. He's getting older. That's going to happen. But, I'm having a hard time differentiating between what's just general age and getting older as a player and then also the back and what all of this work is doing to him just physically and what his future holds. I'm just kind of confused, and I'm curious where you stand on him and what you're seeing.
Well, I still think it's a fairly short sample size for him this season, but one of the things I've noticed is that, you know, he always had a great knack of being able to hit that outside pitch to right field, whether it was low or whether it was up. I think he still hits the one that's up fairly well the right field, but can't hit the one that's low, and that's got to be due to the back, because mm-hmm. when you're trying to get a low pitch, you kind of have to, you know, have a curvature in your back and kind of try to keep the bat back as long as you can. And that's the one he's having trouble with. And I think that's also creating him taking those pitches that are borderline low and outside for call strikes. So I think that's contributing to his strikeout level too. But I do think that, you know, there are times when I see him being able to hit that pitch. And, you know, one of the things we have to do a better job of watching is that on that third day where he plays the third consecutive day where he has trouble with it. And I've tried to notice that in the last week, and it really is the second and third day. The first day he plays after a day off, he doesn't have trouble with that pitch. So I got to think that something in what he does for the back every day or just being tired is contributing to that. Hopefully that rectifies itself. And if it doesn't, I think Wilmer Flores will play more, and I expect Wilmer Flores to get a lot of at-bats in this stretch now where the Mets are playing 17 straight games without a day off. I expect Wilmer Flores to get a lot of at-bats, and maybe David Wright needs a little more rest than he's been getting, maybe in every 2.5 days, so to speak, rather than every 3 days. So I think that, you know, that's something to certainly be watchful for.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a learning curve, and it's every day is kind of a different thing, and I get that. You know, it makes sense because, you know, how he feels today isn't necessarily how he's going to feel in July. Different temperature, different travel, different work, you know, things like that. So I get all that. It's just, you know, like I said, there's also the real element of this, which is that, you know, you want to have his bat in the lineup. You want to have him doing the things that David Wright can do. He's an important part of the team and all that stuff. And you know, it's hard to, I guess, just to watch him decline. And then, you know, also, it's not like he's just like, you know, he's an older player and he's bordering on retiring. And so you can sort of say, well, this is what it is. You know, with him, there's a mystery because we've seen him look really good. Some days he doesn't. Like you mentioned, on the third day, he looks this way. You know, so I think it's sort of like they're trying to figure out the combination and what, you know, what do they need to do to maximize his potential, whatever that might be at this point in his career. And they may just never figure that out. That's my fear, is that it's always going to be this sort of guessing game. And I guess I just have to accept that and wonder at what point do they deem this just too complicated or too difficult or too much work? I guess you just got to keep running them out there. But it just concerns me, I guess, as a fan and as someone who follows the team. It's like, I want this guy to be awesome, and it stinks that we have to kind of watch him struggle with this.
Absolutely. And I think, like, this weekend coming up, if you talk about him playing Friday night and then playing a Saturday 4 o'clock game,
yeah,
then maybe you sit him Sunday because then he doesn't have to play until Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not only the day games after night games to take advantage of, but it's maybe to take advantage of that he has the entire day he comes back to prepare for it. And by that I mean, don't give him the day off Saturday, because you almost lose that with him then playing a Sunday day game. So have him play the 4 o'clock game, have him be off on Sunday, and then maybe have him not play till Monday night, and then use that week to give him the day off Wednesday as well.
Right.
And knowing you're going into a road trip and traveling at that point. So I think it's something to watch. There are times when he's at the plate where he looks like the old David Wright to me, and there are times when he doesn't. And I think that's something that we're going to be seeing really for the rest of his career, to be quite honest.
It does just so much remind me of Mattingly. You know, it's that same, just, you know, one day you're, oh, okay, he's going to be fine. And then the next week, oh, no, here we go. You know, and it's just that constant back and forth, herky-jerky thing. And I hate to see him go through that. But you've been there. I mean, how does he seem, you know, in terms of his spirit? Does he seem, you know, as, you know, the way he always is? Or does it look like this is taking a toll already? Or does it, you know, is it just part of the job and that's what he's doing? How does he seem to you?
Emotionally, I see no difference in David Wright. The only time I ever saw a difference in him was when he was struggling to get back with the team last year. David Wright, and to kind of understand it, David Wright grew up a Mets fan. David Wright grew up knowing the history of the Mets. I can tell you for sure that David Wright cares more about the name in front of his uniform than the one on back. And he takes his captainship very seriously. And people may think he's not this, you know, throw the buffet table over guy, but he has a lot of conversations with players. And I really believe that Kadir had a big influence on Conforto last year. And I think David has taken all that responsibility on his shoulders. He's gotten some help from Granderson on it, certainly. But David is very well respected in that clubhouse. If he goes 0 for 30, he'd still be well respected in that clubhouse. So I think, too, that he sees the overall goal of wanting to go up Canyons of Heroes as a New York Met and doesn't think his career would ever be validated without that. So knowing that David Wright is that way, I'm not surprised that he still has a very positive framework. He's critical of his own play. There's no question about it. But emotionally, I see no difference in David Wright. And I'll give you a great example of him. And you know this, Matt, because you know him well. You'll walk up to someone and say, how are you? And they'll say back, how are you? And it's kind of just a pithy response to someone saying, how are you? But when David Wright says to you, how are you? He really wants to know how you are. And he wants to know if he can help in any way. And knowing that, then you can understand players that he lives with every day. If he does that to you and me, people that are not his teammates, you can only imagine what he does to his teammates. And I think that's what makes David Wright such a special person.
I agree. So on the mound, that's been a completely different I think it's been a little bit more different than we expected, right? You leave spring training, everybody's, you know, firing on all cylinders, you're all excited. And it's been a little rough of a go for Harvey. DeGrom had what he had going on off-field and on-field, for that matter, with his back and his son. Thankfully, everything has worked out for him. You know, hasn't been the smoothest ride. Matt, you know, took him 10 days to make his first start. So it took a little bit of time here for the rotation to, you know, at least get all four of those guys and then Colon to make consecutive starts. And finally, we're on that path. And they look smooth. They look good. Harvey had a good start last night. You know, What toll do you think the schedule had on them, and sort of what do you expect from these guys now going forward, now that they're kind of in that routine?
Well, I think it's big. Players are even young players, Matt. They're creatures of habit.
Yeah.
And I think that it's helped to get back into a regular framework. I do think that there were some mechanical things that Dan Worthen has gone over with Matt Harvey. I thought last night was his best start of the year by far. And it's not so much because of the gun saying 95 or to 97 consistently. It was that late movement on his pitches. And he used the changeup a lot to get hitters out. And I think that I thought from that standpoint, it was a great performance for Harvey. He still threw a lot of pitches, and he was very, very honest about that in his post game. And the next step is to try to, you know, get the pitch count more normal so that he can get through seven or even eight innings in a start to give the bullpen some relief. But this is my sense on the Met rotation. And I'll leave Max to the side for a minute because he's barely had double-digit starts in his career. Everyone is saying, who's the ace of the staff? And I think it's a great radio sports talk discussion. But to me, I still believe that Harvey, DeGrom and Syndergaard on this team are 1A, 1B, 1C. And I don't look at it as 1, 2, 3. I look at it as 1A, 1B, and 1C. And by that I mean in game 7 of a playoff, I would be very confident if any of those three pitchers are on the mound starting that game. And I think Harvey's been a little bit of a work in progress in getting him to the point. Remember, the Mets were told these pitchers not to throw as much at the start of spring training, and then Harvey had the incident at the end of spring training. And that wasn't just something, a medical thing that was physical purely. There was probably an emotional aspect to it, you know. And I can safely tell you there is, because I had the same exact thing Harvey had. Now, I'm not man enough to get it to pass, but my point is I had to deal with blood thinners and things like that to make it better in my body. But I can tell you emotionally, even not having a physical job, it affected me mentally and emotionally. So I think there's some of that at work here too. But I do think that Harvey's performance last night encouraged me that you know, by the time Memorial Day comes, we're all going to be laughing about these first two starts of Matt Harvey and saying, boy, that seems like four decades ago. This rotation is really good. Matt's had a bad night his first night. It was a lot of things, but the long rest was there. You could see he wasn't throwing the curveball for strikes. I still think, and I agree with Keith Hernandez, he's tipping his pitches just a little bit when he throws a slower pitch. That's something Matt has to work on. But overall, I think he's fine. DeGrom's been great. Syndergaard's been great. Now, everyone's saying the Mets have problems in their rotation early in the season because everyone wasn't there. Yet I look at the standings and the team's 13-7. What would they have been if they were okay? Maybe the Mets would have won 12 in a row as opposed to winning, you know, going, you know, winning 11 out of 13. So I think that, you know, sometimes we tend to look at things introspectively day to day, and that's the fun of it too, Matt. But this, I said this at the start of the year, and I believe it now. The New York Mets are the most balanced team in the sport of baseball. And by that, I mean there are teams that might have better bullpen. There are teams that might have better hitting. I don't think there's anyone that has better starting rotation. But the Mets don't have a weakness in any of those areas. The one thing they don't have is team speed, and that's something that, you know, they may want to address at the deadline. But they have a bench. They have a starting lineup that hits home runs, and everyone complains, well, they're too home run happy. Well, you know what? Give me a lineup of guys that hit balls over buildings, yeah. And, you know, I'll see you in October.
Sure.
Okay, that's my feeling on it. I think sometimes we get two numbers crazy in this sport. What's his BABIP? What's his WAR? Well, you know, I say, well, you know, if he hits 30 homers and drives in 110 runs, I really don't care about the BABIP or the WAR because the W's will be there with a lineup that does that. So I think that I picked this team over the Nationals, not so much because I thought their lineups were better, because I think the lineups are pretty similar. I also think that the Nationals starting pitching is better than people think it is, especially if Strasburg does what I think he's capable of doing. The reason I picked the Mets over the Nationals was the Met bullpen to me is significantly better than the National bullpen, and the Met bench is significantly better than the Nationals. And that's the reason I picked them. I think the Nationals will still make the playoffs. I think they'll be a wild card team. But to me, the Mets and Cubs are the two best teams in the National League, and I think the Dodgers and the Nationals are in that next tier.
Before I let you go, you mentioned the bullpen. Are you a believer in what we've seen? Because they've looked really good. I'm very impressed with what this bullpen has looked like over the first month. But bullpens, you know, what they are in April isn't necessarily what they're going to be in September, if at all. I mean, do you believe in this group? Do you think it still needs some tweaking, or do you like what you're seeing?
Well, I think the workload bothers me a little bit. But, you know, you've heard of a manager say, well, I'm going to have a closer by committee. Well, the Mets obviously don't have a closer by committee, but they have a setup man by committee.
Yeah, they do.
They really do. Right. They Bastardo can do it. Reed can do it. Robles can do it. And I want to talk about Robles for a minute because I think that's a guy that has benefited so much from the work that Dan Worthen's done with him and the work Bartolo Colon's done with him. Robles, to me, emotionally looks like a different pitcher on the mound. His body language is very confident. It wasn't that way last year. He throws his slider off his fastball now. He throws it in non-fastball counts. He'll throw the slider. And I think that's part of his maturing process. I think he's going to be a heavy player in this bullpen. Henderson, I worried about the workload a little bit because he is coming off injuries, and you worry about that. But hopefully, if Edgen comes here and can perform a little bit, the Mets might have three left-handers that they can use in this division, in Bastardo, Blevins, and Edgen. Yeah. And I think that gives the Mets a tremendous advantage when they play Bryce Harper and the Nationals, or even Freddie Freeman and the Braves. By the way, I don't think Freeman's as bad a hitter as he's shown. I think by the end of the year, his numbers will be there.
Sure, it'll be fine, yeah.
I think that, you know, I think this bullpen has a few things that make it interesting. It has a lot of different styles of pitchers. And these pitchers, aside from Familiar, don't need to know what their role is that very day. And I think that that makes them interesting from a standpoint of, as an opposing manager, you can't say, okay, well, in the eighth inning, I know we're going to see Reed tonight. It may not be Reed. It could be Robles. It could be Logan Verrett. It could be anybody other than Familia. And I think that makes it interesting, and it makes it difficult to prepare a game plan late in the game because Terry has a lot of options. And the key for Terry, though, is going to be manage these innings so that not any one guy in that bullpen of those setup guys starts piling up a lot more innings than everyone else. it's a tough thing to do, but it's the most important job that the modern day managers have to do, run a bullpen, because it's become so important in whether you win or lose a championship.
Again, that was Rich Catino from ESPN Radio. Thanks again for listening to the Mets Blog Q&A Cast presented by Citi. To kick off the 2016 Mets season, Citi has wrapped a limited number of Mets-themed Citi bikes around the city. So when you spot one, snap a picture, share it on Twitter or Instagram using the hashtag CityPerksSweepstakes to enter for a chance to win great prizes, like throwing out the ceremonial first pitch at Citi Field. For official rules, prizes, and details, visit Mets.com/CityPerksSweepstakes. No purchase necessary. You must be 18 years or older to enter. Offer ends June 7, 2016. Also, we made it a little easier for you to subscribe and listen to all the SNY.TV original podcasts. So if you're a fan of the Mets, obviously you listen to this show, but you know, maybe you're a fan of the Jets or the Knicks or the Rangers, Islanders, college basketball, recruiting, what have you, just subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. That's the SNY.TV audio network. Make sure to rate and review the channel while you're there. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back again next week with another Q&A cast. Hope all's well, and as always, let's go Mets.
This has been the Mets Blog Q&A cast, presented by Citi, part of the SNY.TV audio network.